One, two.
Hello, I'm Sarah Beeny and this is Round the Houses, a podcast all about the homes of the most intriguing people I've ever met. Armed with my trusty microphone, I'm going behind closed doors to talk to some of the nation's favourite musicians, TV presenters and just some generally fascinating people. Even when you think you know a lot about someone, maybe you've read their autobiography or something, I don't think you can really know them until you have seen inside their home. My guest on this episode is a perfect example of this. We've all watched Tim Lovejoy on Sunday Brunch, or maybe you know him from Soccer AM, but you might be surprised to know something about his home life. He's a real king of minimalism, and there's a really interesting reason why.
I had a fire once and I lost everything. The shock was amazing to begin with. And then afterwards you're like, I have nothing. It's a blank page here. I was working the Big Breakfast. I had to go to work with the clothes I was in. That was it. I then went into the props cupboard. I dug out a load of T-shirts with Beat Your Banger on it or something rubbish like that. And I had to go off on, because I was the producer of the outside broadcast at the time. So I had to get in a car or get on a train or something and go around the country for a week. And it was sort of, there was something quite nice about starting again, and it didn't really matter.
This is actually my second visit to Tim's house. He was the original pilot for this podcast series, but unfortunately we couldn't use the recording. So I'm back with new equipment and new producers, and I'm looking forward to sharing Tim's stories with you. Gorgeous Tim Lovejoy, thank you very much for doing my podcast. You're very kind.
Thank you for coming.
Thank you for doing it again, a second time.
I did a whole radio pilot once where I had multiple interviews, and at the end of it, the producer went, I'm really sorry, but I forgot to press record. We'd done it. It was an hour and a half pilot. It had rock stars on it, footballers, the lot. I just didn't know what to do. I went cold and then...
And sweated.
I never did it again, the pilot, but I fortunately got to work on radio anyway, so it's fine.
So it all turned out okay.
It was all right.
How did your career, amazing career, start?
What, right at the beginning? Do you want to go about? Well, I was sort of just...
What did you want to be when you were a kid?
I always wanted to be a footballer, basically, really, because that's all I used to do, is play football a lot. But, around 19, I sort of realised someone's just not going to come and hand me some money, and I tried doing work in clothes shops, and then I thought, right, money! I'll go and get money. So I worked in finance, and I didn't like that either. I became a mortgage broker. So I suddenly thought to myself, I've got to follow my dream, and a dream of mine was to work in broadcasting. I always fancied the idea of doing something like that, so...
How did you know about broadcasting? What did your parents do?
My dad was, he worked in personnel at a company. My mum ended up being a saleswoman selling programmers for computers back in the day to companies. IT, I suppose.
But nothing to do with broadcasting?
Nothing to do with broadcasting, no. Everyone laughed at me when I said it. You know, it's one of those things, though, that I think about this now. I started telling everyone, hey, I'm going to be a TV presenter. It's the most ridiculous thing ever, but without... committing yourself to that and everybody laughing at you, including family and friends, and everybody going, what's Tim think he's doing? But without doing that sort of commitment, you have to do that to actually take yourself through the process to do it. Because I was just a bloke who grew up in a place called Rickmansworth, Chorleywood, out there, like little towns near Watford. And I didn't know anyone in broadcasting or anything. But it was boom time for TV then. I mean, we'd gone from three channels to four channels. And
slow down!
And I just used to like TV and I liked all the media and stuff, so I thought I'd give it a go. And what I used to do is I just used to work in bars during the day or night, and then I used to phone up people and say, can I work for free? But any money I got, I used to make showreels, and I used to run around London with a camera. In those days, you needed a cameraman to do it. You had to hire someone. It wasn't like an iPhone. And with the cameraman, you had to hire sound as well, cause, you know, so it's a two-man job. And I used to go around with cameraman and sound, and I used to pretend I worked for Cable London, which was a thing, but no one really knew what it was. You know, what's a good example of that now? Blockchain. Yeah. Anyone mentions blockchain, I'll have a piece of that, you know. What's blockchain? I want it, blockchain. And that was like Cable London back then. No one really knew what it is, but we all knew in America they had cable. So I used to turn up to premieres and stuff, so I worked for Cable London. It was a lie. And just start interviewing people to make showreels. So
you're the original blagger?
I'd be balls back then. Yeah, it's like I'm so embarrassed at the things I used to do. I used to make these showreels. I used to get like little campaigns. I used to just do flyers and send them off to all the producers, all the production companies. I just used to phone people up and say, "Hey, I'm the hottest thing." And it's so embarrassing now, but it kind of pushed me towards where
Amazing.
I wanted to go. So I ended up working behind the cameras before in front of the cameras. I ended up becoming a producer, a researcher, and then a producer on TV shows. So I worked on The Big Breakfast and stuff. But
I loved Big Breakfast.
Yeah, and TV changed dramatically then.
Revolutionary stuff, actually, because it was kind of... I sort of look back now, I still think that we... That Breakfast show, it's never been able to be bettered, really, than The Big Breakfast.
Well, it was just so different.
Because you've kind of had a go. You've pushed yourself out there and gone, yeah, you know what, I'm going to take... This world is for the taking, and I'm going to go and take it. Is there something that you feel is you really want to do that you haven't... If I kind of gave you a blank check and just said, right, I'm going to commission anything. You can do any job, any show, anything. What would it be?
Well, I'm at the moment moving towards podcasting like yourself here, and I've done over 80 podcasts now.
I love your podcast.
Thank you very much. And that's why I would put all the money into, because I really like long form interviews. I don't know how long this is going to be and how long this is going to get edited down to. I generally don't edit mine. I keep them long. And so some of the interviews I've done recently have been an hour and 45 minutes. The one I did with you was way over an hour. And people love them because I think it's a new form of entertainment we're moving into. People like to hear more depth to the person you're interviewing and stuff. So that's really what I'm doing at the moment. And so there's not a dream scenario. I mean, I'm moving into what I enjoy doing, which is talking to people.
You've always been, I always thought that really often your name comes up and I always say things about Tim Loftoe, he's kind of ahead of the curve all the time. And that's not necessarily a good thing always, because if you're ahead of the curve, people take a while to catch up and then they sort of think, that's a bit weird. And then a bit later they're like, oh no, now I've got it. Because you started Channel B years ago.
Yeah.
And that was way before web channels. Nowadays, everyone will go, God, that's a brilliant idea. And it was at the time, but I really remember coming in and doing an interview with you on that. And it was such a revolutionary idea. You were just ahead of your time.
Yeah, the idea was to do content for the internet. No, it's so stupid now that it didn't work.
Because it would have done now.
Yeah, it would. Yeah, but the idea that I'm saying it was like revolutionary. But
it really was.
It sort of was. We were just doing content for the internet. I became obsessed with that. What was happening was I was producer at Soccer AM and we were getting lots of footage come in and I was putting it on TV. I did a podcast recently with Helen Chamberlain. And she reminded me that the broadcasters were saying, this isn't good enough quality to stick on TV. You're not allowed to do it. And I went, I'm going to do it anyway. As long as you can hear it and you can vaguely make out what's going on, it's fine. I was also obsessed with CCTV cameras. And they were getting really good. The footage, something got stolen from my office. And I went to look at the CCTV footage and the footage was getting really good. And I thought, do you know what? It's actually better when it's not so good. It's sort of more mysterious and exciting. But I thought, wow, this is really interesting, the fact that you can just start broadcasting anything now. And so I just became obsessed with the idea that, the quality didn't have to be as high. People just want good content. But the quality of the stuff we put out on the internet was great. But at the time we had things, problems, like buffering problems. It's
amazing.
It's funny now that we think about it. So we invested in new technology, which supposedly wouldn't buffer. Twitter hadn't come along by then. So, we didn't have those marketing tools. There was Facebook, really. There's no Instagram. Actually, I think it might have been MySpace. Oh, no, Facebook had come along. But there was no Twitter, because I remember whilst I was towards the end of doing Channel B, I remember signing up to Twitter. And so it was,
I remember signing up to Twitter. I remember someone saying to me, God, there's this new thing, Twitter, you ought to get your handle. And I was like, what? And if you reckon podcasts are coming in and they're the next best thing, they will be. So that's absolutely guaranteed.
I think it's a really interesting. I've just been, this morning I've been listening to a podcast on ancient Egypt and how there's possibility that there was a civilization maybe as advanced as us years ago, because they're finding that, I mean, it's a long one, but I tuned into it this morning. It's 2.5 hours long. And I'm like, this is brilliant. And they're
amazing.
Going into so much depth about how the pyramids, they still have no idea how they can construct them. We would struggle now. So there must have been a type of
power of some sort.
Yeah, just the way they've done everything. Anyway, I won't go into it now, but it was
send it to me. I want to listen.
Yeah, but it is amazing, and I love all this long form interviews. Yeah. I mean, everyone I do is, I did it with you, and people loved it. You can just get stuck into more detail with people and learn, which is what I think we like doing.
So, remind me why your podcast is called Dear Lovejoy.
It started off with a friend of mine. We started as an agony column. I'd read so many self help books and been in therapy and done all those sort of things. So I thought, hey, I'm going to give my knowledge to everybody else. It started off as a joke, really, a bit of a laugh and just having some fun, and then it started getting more and more serious, and then we get more experts in, and now it's it's called Dear Lovejoy. It's you can subscribe to it. It's fantastic.
Yeah, it's very good. I have listened to most of them. They're absolutely brilliant. There's one you did about the history of drunkenness, which is absolutely hilarious.
It's interesting. Yeah.
Amazing. Yeah. Really, I went spent ages telling everyone about that one. I was like, God, this is so brilliant. So your home, how long have you had this house here?
Over 16 years now, yeah.
Gosh, so you've been here a very long time. Mm-hmm. And are you very emotionally attached to it?
I thought I was, but I've realised recently that being attached to material things is not a good way to be, so I'm not anymore. I did used to always go, I love my house, I'm trying to stop myself loving my house, because I do think often about when you're lying on your deathbed. This is from doing the podcast, honestly. I end up talking to so many of these self-help guys or motivational speakers, and a lot of them say you should be thinking about when you die a lot, maybe daily.
Should you?
Yeah, you should, because it makes life brilliant. This is the concept behind it.
Cool.
So I'm doing my preaching now on your podcast. God. But the idea is if you wake up every day and go, I'm going to die one day, because you are going to die. That's the reality.
Definitely.
Of it. Everyone here is going to die. And so what you do is you wake up and then you start thinking, well, what am I doing with my life? And if you think about being dead one day, then you start living, is the concept.
Okay.
Do you get that?
Yeah, no, I do. I mean, it's like take each day as it comes and or make it matter.
Not necessarily make it matter, because that you end up doing YOLO then, don't you? You only live once and end up going, we're going to get drunk every day and party. It's not that.
Then you wake up tomorrow and wish you were dead.
It's just sort of exactly. It's just sort of appreciating what your life's about. So I look now and I try, because I do struggle sometimes with mental health issues and a bit of depression. And so sometimes I wake up and I just think, Jesus, look what I've done. You know, I was talking to you about it earlier. I end up with a good TV show, a lovely house and all that sort of stuff. But then I look at my kids and I think, that's what it's really about, children and all that sort of stuff. So I'm trying to stay realistic about the house.
Okay, so not get too emotionally attached to
exactly,
it.
Exactly, yeah.
And so have you always struggled a bit with mental health?
Possibly.
When did you recognise it? Was there a moment?
There was a time when my brother died, and off the back of that it was a reactionary depression. So I've realised that I just got really miserable and I sort of went down into a big dark hole. And
were you close to your brother?
Well, yeah, there was only my brother and me and my family. So he died of pancreatic cancer. It's quite a horrible thing to watch someone die of cancer, because his brain was still very active. He was still exactly the same person, but his body was withering away. And it was one of those horrific things. Anyone who's gone through it, and he was young, he was 37 years old. And when you watch someone go through that, it's like you're living in a horror movie, because you're watching this person that you love deteriorate in front of you. And my marriage had broken up just after that, and everything else.
So it's not surprising you were a bit depressed.
So I was it brought all the demons out, and then sort of I went through some dark times. I still carried on doing my job, and what was very strange about that, and that time you work in the same industry as me, is I never told anybody, because even though this was 10, 14 years ago, or 12 years ago, something. In that time, I really felt that if I told people, I might lose my job. I might be, and we've moved so far now, where I think if I had really bad depression, I could just walk into the producers and the bosses at Channel 4 and everything, say, hey, I've got depression, can you give me some time off, and they'd be fine and my job would be okay. But you know, I think we're moving in such a great direction with all this sort of stuff.
So you had some therapy?
Yeah.
And that helped?
Yeah.
Yeah. And before that was this house full of clutter, and now it's all beautiful and empty.
It's one of the things I've done, actually. It's never been that full of clutter, but one of the real big things I learned. What I did is, when I started feeling down and miserable, I thought, I'm going to read loads of books and try and fix myself. I didn't take drugs. There was one tiny bit of period that I was diagnosed with some drugs, and I hated it. really didn't enjoy it at all. Not saying that you shouldn't take drugs, by the way. I don't know. And this is always the problem about talking about depression. I say this on my podcast a lot, is I struggle with it, especially, you know, the reason why I struggle talking about depression is there's so many different types of it. There's chemical imbalance. There's sort of, you know, there's all sorts of different...
It's very personal, isn't it?
Yeah, there's different reasons. But the one thing I knew is that I didn't want to do the drugs, and I wanted to try and think, work out why I was feeling the way I was and everything. So I bought a lot of self-help books and went into therapy, as I say. And they all basically say the same thing. But one of the great things I got from it was actually getting rid of all the stuff from your life is really therapeutic.
And that's so, why the room's empty?
Yeah, so that is why if you... So it does work. Minimalism is very healthy on the mind because you don't have... My mum would disagree with this so much. Her house is just full of clutter. And she goes, I love it. It's what makes me happy. Having all the clutter everywhere. Or she doesn't call it clutter. Whereas I think less is more. And she always walks in here and goes, when are you going to decorate your house? I was like, it is. This is it.
It's got white walls, white ceilings, yeah. A really beautiful wooden floor and two rather fabulous rugs.
Yeah.
And that's a skinny, is it? Skinny,
yeah, that's...
A skinny boy.
Yeah, that is my art.
Which is a little boy dressed in a onesie. He's not normally dressed in a onesie, is he?
No, he's usually just holding a grenade and a pair of combat shorts. And but Skuny's he's become a friend of mine now. He's a really good artist. I love him. And I went to, it was actually a pancreatic charity ball held by Suggs, from the frontman of Madness, and Madness were playing that night, and I walked in and I saw this, and I knew Skuny's work, and this was like a one-off. I walked in and I went to my mate, I love that, that's amazing. You sometimes see art and it just absolutely, you just go, wow, that's incredible. But I ended up in this bidding war for him, and I had a few drinks.
Oops. So I was going to say, because Skinny's boy, how many did he make of them? I've seen about four of them, but I don't know.
No, he's still making them, actually.
Oh,
yeah, I think so. They're on demand, and his career is going incredibly well now. He's on fire. He's got so much going on for him. And his work is just going up and up and up in value. He's charging more and more for his
stuff. He is brilliant. I absolutely agree.
But he's very good. But it's an amazing piece of art because people come in here. He's a life-size boy. I keep him in a glass box, as you can see, because people come in and they wanted to touch him. But everyone has an opinion on this guy, this little, I call him Max, because he's in the Where the Wild Things Are outfit. And and everyone comes in and goes, what, that's so creepy, it's weird. And I like that reaction as much as, wow, that is amazing.
Yeah.
And it's really strange, because if you say to most people art, including myself, you go, yeah, it's a picture of some description. That's what people think, you know, it's in a frame, it sits on the wall. So to actually have something which stands there like that, I think is exceptional. It's lovely. And I think it's my most favourite thing. Is that the right expression?
I think it is.
My favourite thing in the house is probably that, but I don't want to get attached to it because on my deathbed, I don't want to say the highlight of my life was buying a piece of art. That's what I don't want to be
doing. Tell me, what has been the highlight of your life so far?
Having three children.
Oh, that's a good thing to say. Let's go through to your kitchen.
Yeah.
And you've got this incredibly minimal
through
sitting room, so double reception, which is lovely. And then through to this really light kitchen with a table that's covered in paint. I love this table. The rest of your house is immaculate. And then you've got a table which literally looks like it came out of a school art room.
So when I did the kitchen up a couple of years ago, I always thought, well, I've got to get a new table because it doesn't match the floor and everything. And that was my thought process behind it. And so I kind of let the kids go a bit mad on it as they were doing GCSE art and things. So they were painting and it got a bit of paint on. I started thinking, I quite like the fact that it's lived in. So since then, I've encouraged them to just paint. I mean, we've got carving in it as well, and they've written all over it. But I quite like the idea now that this is the kids' table. They draw all over it, they paint. And, you know, Jamie, she's five, she's in here painting all the time, and then the kids come in and they do their... All that purple stuff, that's GCSE art. That's
love it.
I was going to say it's A-star art, but it's now numbers, isn't it? 9.
It's a brilliant table. Sadly, my table looks like this, and they're not allowed to paint on it. But you know, that's boys for you,
aren't they?
No. Well, no, they carve into it. They've got holes. They've carved into it everywhere. But I love this. This is one of my favourite things in your house.
Oh, thank you.
I really love it. I think it's really brilliant. And you've got more artwork in here. You're quite an art collector, aren't you?
Well, I've stopped.
Except because you ran out of wall.
And money. No, seriously. I just, one day, because I keep looking at art, and then one day I just thought to myself, I think I've got enough. So my walls are covered, and really? I don't need to buy any more. So I've just sort of stopped. I really like the stuff I've got here, though, and so it's colourful, isn't it? And I like the what do you call those? The neons.
Yeah,
I love the neon.
So let's go to another room upstairs. So this is very tidy. And are you tidy upstairs as well?
Well, I've obviously had a tidy because you're coming.
Like, if I said you can have any house you want, but you can't have this one, anywhere in the world or the country, where would it be?
I think I'd still stay in London.
Would you buy back this house in this location?
No, I'd probably go for... I'd want to change. I'd probably go for something really modern and glass.
Okay, would you?
If money was no object, I'd go for a big penthouse flat thing. Yeah, you know, I'd go for one of those huge, great big flats. Yeah, I think that'd be fantastic. I do that sort of living where you look out over London.
Amazing.
Through glass, yeah.
Do you know, I just recently did a podcast in someone's flat like that. I honestly, it was really, you know, jaw-dropping. You know, when
really?
You walk in, I just went, wow, yeah. Amazing. I mean, it really was amazing. You could see for kind of 10 miles across London.
Yeah.
It was amazing. I can't imagine living in it, but it was totally amazing. I love this room. This is your
Thank
bedroom.
You.
Very
yes.
tidy, super tidy. And I love the fact it's a grey carpet with a really nice bed with a grey headboard, grey cushions and grey base. It's all quite grey.
Well, yeah, it's kind of neutral, isn't it? Apparently, when you're in a bedroom, you've got to keep the colours quite neutral.
Why?
I'm quite... Well, you know more about this than me, but but it's how you have to, you know, it's a state of rest in here.
Yeah.
You know, so if you put lots of reds in your bedroom, red is... I believe in this colour stuff, do you?
A bit, although I've got a red bedroom.
Oh. So red is dangerous excitement. It sets the atmosphere of the... Well, how many kids you've got, you can tell you've got a red bedroom. That is why there's red lights, Sarah, outside Ladies of the Night.
Oh, gosh, I hadn't really thought what that reflected.
Because red means excitement, and I want in my bedroom, I come here to sleep. And tranquility.
Okay, moving on. So everything's white, all the walls are white, the ceiling's white, apart from anything that's green.
Yeah, they never used to be, but I just thought, just simplify my life, paint everything white, keep it minimal. Have you ever seen the documentary, The Minimalist, or any of that? They go far, these guys. They do the... People who are real minimalists are only allowed to own something like 20 things or something ridiculous like that. And I couldn't do that, but I look in my daughter's bedroom here, Jamie, who's 5, and it drives me nuts, but she won't let me throw anything away. I slowly do it when she's not around.
This is amazing, because this is a bedroom that, without doubt, is owned by a little girl.
Pink.
It is a pink room.
Everything.
It is really
there.
Cool.
Yeah.
It's a little girl's delight. Are your other daughters... tidy or
no, they're not. They're really messy, sadly.
So it's just you on your own.
Well,
and I'm trying to
also get them to throw stuff away, but I think we generally want to hoard things, and it's a really hard thing not to hoard.
I think it's because by nature the whole concept of consumerism, which sort of came with the Victorians, where they kind of mass produce things, and then before that everything, if you had something you had to keep it because you'd need it.
Yeah,
I don't think consumerism actually works with human beings.
So,
buying
right,
stuff.
I think
we don't
you're right.
Need it.
I've been to 2 talks recently at the V&A about fashion, and both of them. One was Nike was discussing sustainability. They have a sustainability CEO or something. I don't know, chief operator or something like that. And then there were some fashion designers as well. And all they talked about all the time was sustainability, and trying to get away from the disposable culture that we've got with clothes.
Now, we buy a T-shirt, we wear it half a dozen times. If you're, you know, if you're going out for a night out, so often women will go, I'll get a couple of dresses and then wear one once. And it's just not a good culture for us. And I think things might be changing with the idea of sustainability. So I think my children are hoarding all their clothes at the moment. I think they might get round to having half a dozen really lovely pieces. And look at me, I sound like a fashion designer, a few pieces, you know, a collection. But, you know, I think we might be moving away from that. At the moment, we've got really cheap disposable clothes.
To me, the most wasteful thing about consumerism, which I find really frustrating, is kind of what I call household stuff. I want to call it household shit. I think I can, because it's a podcast, so I can say it, actually. But it's just shit. It's like kind of plastic rubbish that you buy that doesn't really work. And then you sort of buy it because it's cheaper. So things like, I know, I recently bought an amazing hose reel where it's retractable, so you pull it and it winds back in. It was really expensive, but it's absolutely fantastic. And I looked at it and thought, I probably have spent, I don't know, I reckon I've probably bought about 10 hose reels in the last 20 years, and they've broken and don't work and they go on in the skip. This one was 4 times the price, but this is one I'll keep forever and ever and ever. And I think we don't invest in things now, so we don't spend more. So I used to work sell vacuum cleaners for a company called Vorwerk, and I still have the same vacuum cleaner that I had 25 years ago, and it works brilliantly. But most people would go and buy a Henry for 120 quid and then it would break, and they'd chuck it in the skip and buy another one.
That's why that table's so good in the kitchen, because it was something I was going to get rid of, and now you're saying it's the, and I agree with you, it's one of the features of the house. You've just got to keep something.
But it's solid and it's well made. I think one of the problems with a lot of stuff you buy nowadays, it's so badly made that the legs would have fallen off. And, you know, that's a really solid table that's properly made in the first place. And it'll be there in 400 years if you still like it.
A good tip for life, though, is if you're feeling down and you're feeling a bit miserable and you're lost a bit, first thing you do is tidy your bedroom, and then start tidying your house, and then look around and just get rid of everything you don't want. Honestly, just start getting rid of it. And I think what we do badly is we start buying stuff to try and make ourselves happy rather than getting rid of stuff which will make us happier. So you look around your house, you go, if I get rid of all that and I have an empty space, I can start again my life there. Whereas what we do is we go, I'll buy a house, I'll buy a car, I'll go on holiday, I'll buy a new dress, I'll buy a pair of shoes, I'll buy a suit. All these things don't make you happy, getting rid of stuff.
But actually, there's a...
You disagree with me.
No, I don't disagree. I do agree, but I actually think the most important thing is not to buy the stuff in the first place rather than get rid of it.
Because they've made it all affordable for us. That's the problem.
So you think, I'll take this whole basket of stuff home.
Yeah.
And then you've got a basket of stuff to take to the charity shop.
It was a tough decision years ago whether to buy something or not, because it costs money. And now, because it's cheaper and affordable, it's not as hard a decision. I always say that if you're going to buy anything and you're not quite sure about it,
don't buy it.
No, wait 30 days.
Yes, that's good.
Wait a month. If you still want it at the end of the month, it's probably worth buying. If you've forgotten about it, then... So that's an easy way of making a decision on absolutely everything.
So where do you put stuff? And where's the holding space?
I've got a spare room, and I give all my charity stuff to Barnardo's, who I'm a supporter of. I like Barnardo's. So I've been there recently, but these are the things I'm getting rid of. I've got my Lego I'm getting rid of. I hate Lego. I hate it. I've never liked Lego. I hate building things.
Oh my God, I love Lego.
Do you? Oh, I hated it.
Really? But this is the big Lego, this is the Duplo Lego. You see, I'm obsessed with Lego, and I do get rid of a lot of the kids' toys. I take them to the charity shop in the middle of the night, because otherwise they always bring them back out again, which is really annoying. I couldn't get rid of my Lego.
So there was a stage in my life where I would collect books, and the reason being is that we've been brainwashed. This is, again, the brainwashing process, from a very early age to believe that you cannot destroy a book.
Totally.
You can destroy anything else. So you can get a vase and you go, I don't like that, and chuck it in the tip. But to get a book is, no one's allowed to destroy a book ever. And it's an amazing thing, but I don't destroy books. I take them now to the charity shop. But I went for a long time where I thought, I can't actually get rid of them.
We do have a funny relationship with books, I think, in this country, because My mother, who used to get really cross if you broke the spine, so if you opened the book too far and cracked the spine, she used to go, don't do that. And also, I remember my mother died when I was 10, but she used to make me turn the pages like this. So that's like you couldn't turn the pages from the bottom, it had to be from the top right-hand corner with your forefinger so you didn't crease the page.
Oh, your mum's weird.
Yeah, she was.
It's a book.
She was like, oh, that, so this is how I was taught to read as a child, is like really carefully, it's like some sort of piece of jewellery. Then when I met my husband, we were on holiday and he was reading a trashy novel. He got halfway through and I said, can you hurry up? Because I want to read it. Can you hurry up? And one day he picked up the novel by the pool and he went like this and he tore the book in half and he gave me the first
and no, you can't do that.
I backed against the wall and went, what the hell have you done? He went, well, I'm reading the second half and you can read the first half.
Wow.
And he whipped it in half.
You married him?
Yeah.
Had you married him by then?
No, we just...
What, and you still married him after that?
Yes,
you're kidding me.
Kind of wild and impulsive. I like that. I thought, that's the man I need to breed with.
It's fascinating about books, and my kids adore reading. The twins, anyway. Jamie's, you know, learning to read at the moment, but the twins absolutely adore it. Insatiable appetite, and they just don't stop. They're studying at the moment for their GCSEs. And what I said to them, how are you coping with it? And the really bad stuff is we don't get to read anymore because they're doing that. So they absolutely adore. Upstairs in their rooms, they've just got walls and walls of books because they love it. And they're hoarding their books as well. And I keep saying, come on, you're not going to read any of these again. Let's get rid of them and take them to... And they want to keep them.
So if there was one thing that you had to get out of the house, obviously after... Princess, the cat, and your daughters, what would be the one thing you take with you?
Oh, do you know what? I'm going to have to say this because after all the advice I've been doing on the podcast, my podcast is nothing. Just let it all go.
Really?
You shouldn't have attachment to anything. Can I go back to, if you're on your deathbed, you're not going to go, oh, I had a lovely house, I had a lovely car, I had a piece of art. On your deathbed, you're going to go, I had good relationships or bad relationships, and how did I conduct myself? Nothing material matters, I don't think. And I think that's why you can't have too much attachment to that. And I've had a few incidents in the past couple of years. I've got a piece of art downstairs, which I've glued back together, actually, bizarrely, but it broke, and it cost quite a lot of money. And the cleaner just knocked it off the wall and it smashed. And I just didn't know what to do with myself. I had a situation where I lost a load of watches. I got them stolen. Someone burgled me and I lost my watch collection, which was worth a lot of money, thousands. And I had my Vespas stolen. And then after a while, you realise that it affects you for a small amount of time. And then you get over it. And I think that's how you should go through life. If you value something too much, it owns you. You don't own it.
I have this theory sometimes that what would you do if you had every single possession that you... Everything you have in the world. If I gave you a suitcase of cash for it, what would you buy back?
Well, I like that question. That's brilliant.
I kind of think what... You can all buy it all back. You can buy the whole lot back or you can just have the suitcase.
Well, the best thing to do is when you move somewhere... Keep everything in the boxes for at least 2 or 3 weeks. Don't unpack. Only unpack when you use something. And then after 2 or 3 weeks, or even
get rid
if you
of all
you
the rest
go,
of it.
Yeah, just go, I actually don't need any of this stuff. Look, and then you'll end up with this really lovely bare house, no clutter. It'd be amazing. And you go, oh, this is beautiful. I wake up every day feeling excited and happy about my life.
But there is a little bit of me that thinks when you look around a home and you see things and they make you smile because you remember where you got them or the day you were given them or the trip that you went on, which is why I really hate interiors that have all been bought at the same time from one shop by somebody else.
Right.
You know, sort of in a way, okay, you know, those homes that you kind of see at very top end homes where it's all been sort of interior designed and you just walk in, you get the whole thing ready made with the sort of flowers and the vase and everything. And I kind of think there's no story to any of it. So my home, which is the opposite of yours, every single thing I could tell you where I got it, who I was with, and what was, you know, that was in a junk shop in so-and-so, and I was on this holiday, and it was really fun, and they've all got stories, and there's something nice about it.
You have to see
stories.
My mother's house. It's just, is it my, like my mum's house is just absolutely jammed full of stuff, and I just go and I think...
So this is the antidote to your mother's house.
Yeah,
your children's houses will be completely rammed with things.
Yeah.
Brilliant. Well, thank you, Tim, very much.
Pleasure.
A beautiful home.
Thank you.
And exciting. Podcasts are here to stay. You said it first.
Definitely.
I've loved talking to Tim. I think this episode was even better the second time around. In fact, let's say it definitely was. You'll never know. You can watch Tim most weekends on Sunday Brunch on Channel 4 and also presenting BT Sports panel on BT Sport. Thank you so much for all your lovely podcast reviews. Nikki says, I've been looking forward to this for a while. Love the great chatty style. Can't wait for the next one. Thanks, Nikki. It helps more people discover us. So if you're listening and loving, please do rate and review us on Apple Podcasts. And we're also on Google Podcasts, Spotify, Stitcher, or wherever you usually listen. And on the next episode...
They would interview someone for half an hour and they would put the traffic in the middle, and I always felt like such a twerp. It's Dolly Parton, here I am, you know, M6 really slow, southbound. Goddess of country music. Oh no, don't worry, you carry on.
I'll be in the home of radio legend Lynn Bowles, talking about how it felt to leave Radio 2 after nearly 20 years and what really makes a home for life. Thank you to Tim. Thanks to the producers Angela Robinson and Matt Hill and Lucy Dearlove at Rethink Audio. And thanks to all of you for listening. See you soon.